This is Audible.
10-Tor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The First Mountain Man by William W. Johnstone, narrated by J. Rodney Turner. Book 1. 1. When you call me that, smile. Owen Wister. He was on the east side of the Absaroka Range, in the timber, heading down toward the Poposia. He was in no hurry, and there was no real reason for him to go there. He just had him a hankering, call it. He felt he might run into some old friends around there who, like the Lone Rider, had felt the calling for companionship. He hadn't been down there in some time, not since the last rendezvous back in 30, he thought it was. He was pretty sure it was the year of our Lord 1837. Had to be close to that anyway. If the year was as he figured, he was about 35 years old, near as he could figure, and he'd never felt better in his life. The rider was of average height for his time, lean-hipped and rawhide tough, with tremendous power in his upper body. What women he'd run into over the last 17 or 18 or so years in the mountains considered him handsome. He tried to recall the last time he'd seen a white woman. 2, 3 years at least. Just thinking about the rendezvous got him all lost in memories, but not so lost that he forgot where he was and to keep a sharp eye out for Injuns. He rode with his Hawken rifle across the saddle horn and had another one shoved into a saddle boot. He carried 2 50-caliber pistols behind his waist sash, and 2 more hung in leather on the saddle horn, one on each side. He'd always boasted that he was a peaceful man, but Injuns is notional folks. You never really know how to take them. A man can near about always ride into an Injun camp and they'll feed you and bed you down for the night. They'll usually treat a body right well. Of course, depending on the tribe and the general mood of the day, the rub comes when you try to leave the next morning. They might decide to have some fun and skin you alive. He had seen what was left of a man after that. It was a disheartening sight, to say the least. He didn't expect the other feller cared much for it either. The Lone Rider rode easy, ruminating on this and that. He'd seen a white man up the trail about 5 months back when the snow was thick and he'd told him it was Christmas. That had got him to feeling all maudlin and the like, thinking about folks and family he hadn't seen in years and would probably never see again on this side of the grave. Time gets confusing up in the high lonesome. The months and years just blend together and don't take on a whole hell of a lot of importance. He reined up at a creek and swung down from the saddle, getting the kinks out of his muscles and bones and giving his horse a chance to drink and blow. He rode a mountain horse he'd caught and gentle broke. Called him Hammer for no particular reason. Hammer was a gray, tough as a mountain goat and stood 18 hands high. His good pack horse was also a gray, just as tough as Hammer and just as smart. He wouldn't tote no more than he felt he could comfortably carry. Overload him and he just wouldn't move. Stand there and look at you with them eyes telling you to get that crap off his back. Smart. The rider looked all around him careful, then stood still and sniffed the air. He could detect nothing in the cool mountain air except the scent of nature's own growth in springtime. There was no Injun smell. After so many years in the mountains, he had learned that all men have a distinctive scent that can be picked up by others if you just teach your blower to do it. He stretched out on his belly by the creek and took him a long drink of cold, clean water. He thought about taking off his moccasins and sticking his bare feet in the creek, and splashing around some, like a kid. but some poor critter downstream that wasn't hurting nobody, and who'd just come out of the woods for a cool drink, would be sick for a week. He did take off his moccasins and rub his feet, though. Felt good. He rubbed his feet dry on the grass and slipped back into his moccasins. He chewed on a piece of jerky and wished long for some coffee. But he'd been out of coffee for weeks. That was another reason for this trip. He had to resupply with salt and beans and coffee and the like. He also had to get him a new pair of long-handle underwear. His was plumb wore out, and his buckskins were thin. He was known from the Northwest to the deserts of the Southwest as Preacher. He was far from being a man of the cloth, about as far as a man can get, even though he'd been raised in the church as a boy. When he was new and green to the High Lonesome, Injuns had grabbed him and was planning on slow roasting him to see how well he stood pain. If he stood it well, they would praise him and sing songs about him. Of course, those songs would be sort of hard to appreciate from the grave. So he started preaching. He preached all day and all night. The Injuns finally figured he was crazy as a lizard and turned him loose. The nickname stuck. Preacher had been in the mountains since he was just a boy. He had run away from a good home and reached the mountains a year later. And while he had left the mountains many times to see what was over the next ridge or river, he always returned to the High Lonesome. He had lived with a number of tribes and gotten along with many of them. He'd had him a squaw from time to time and a few offspring. But unlike many of his counterparts, Preacher could see the writing on the wall, so to speak, even though he might have some difficulty reading actual words. The beaver market was glutted. Man was hard-pressed to make a living anymore, that it was only going to get worse. He knew that, while most of the other mountain men did not or would not accept it. Preacher could do a lot of things besides trapping. He could pan for gold. He could scout for the army or for wagon trains. He even knew a little about farming, although he kept that to himself. He cut his eyes to hammer as the horse raised his head and pricked his ears up. He was over to him in a heartbeat, stroking his neck and talking to him low, so he wouldn't whinny and give away their position. He spoke to the pack horse and rubbed his neck. They stood quiet, but they weren't liking what they smelled one damn bit. Then Preacher smelled what the horses had smelled, and he heard them coming. Injuns, and their scent was strong. With it came the scent of blood, fresh blood. He picketed both horses on graze and pulled the pistols from the saddle horn. He slipped to the top of a rise and peeked through the brush. What he saw below didn't sit well at all. 5 young bucks, and they had prisoners. The Injuns looked to be Arapaho, and Preacher never had got on too well with that tribe. They just didn't much like the white man. Preacher lay still, moving only his eyes, carefully checking everything out. But it appeared 5 was all there was. But 5 bucks on the warpath was plenty. He could see fresh scalps on the manes of their horses, and on their war lances. They weren't Injun scalps. The bucks had 2 white women and 2 white men, and from the looks on their faces, they were all plenty scared. And they had a right to be. A lot of wagon trains were pushing west to Oregon or California. Wagons had been rolling to Oregon for several years. Nat Wyeth, Preacher thought it was, took the first immigrants over the Oregon Trail back in 31 or 32. Been a lot of them since then, and a lot of them hadn't made it. Preacher had him a thought that those poor scared pilgrims was part or had been part of a small wagon train that just ran out of luck. "The Lord will see us through, brothers and sisters," a man said. "Put your faith in the Lord." Missionaries, Preacher thought. Come to the wilderness to bring Jesus to the savages. Damn fools bringing women folk out here to preach with them. Injuns don't think like white people. It's not that the whites is right and the Injuns is wrong. It's just that they're two very different ways of life. Whites and Injuns don't think alike. Injuns don't steal because they're bad people. It's more of a game to them, and right and wrong doesn't enter into it. Courage and dying well and bravery mean a great deal to Injuns. They can't, none of them, abide a coward. Preacher had tried to tell a few missionaries that the Injuns didn't need or want their religion. They had a religion all their own, and they practiced it and lived by it. But you'd have better luck trying to tell a lawyer to shut up than you would with a Bible thumper. Preacher watched his one young buck pulled at himself and grinned at the others. He knew then that one of the young women, and they were both lookers, was fixing to get hopped on right then and there in front of God and everybody else. Then the buck said as much. Preacher spoke some Arapaho and heard him tell the woman what he was going to do. She looked up at him from the log where they'd plopped her, confusion and fear on her face. Then that buck just reached down and run his hand up under her dress. That woman squalled something fierce. "Here now," a man blustered up. "You stop that barbaric behavior, you hear me?" The woman's hands was tied behind her back, but her feet were free. She kicked that buck right between his legs, and he went down howling and puking, both hands holding on to his privates. Preacher winced, and he was 30 feet away. Preacher knew if he was to do anything, it had to be now. He eased the hammers back on his old 50-caliber pistols and laid them on the ground. He took the second brace, hoping the powder was dry on them all, and eased the hammers back on them. Another buck jerked out a knife and whacked an ear off one of the men prisoners. The man screamed and the blood poured. The buck then proceeded to make it clear to the lady, using sign language that an idiot could understand, that if she didn't hike up her skirts and do it real quick, he was going to cut something else off the man, and it was located a mite lower than his remaining ear. "Melody," the man with one ear hollered. Preacher figured he got the message, too. The buck she'd kicked in the privates was still on the ground, rolling and moaning and being sick all over the place. She had really put her little foot in him. There wasn't any other option left, Preacher. He lifted his pistols with the double-set triggers and let them bang. He had double-shotted these, and the first ball hit the buck with the knife in the chest. The second ball hit him in the belly. Both balls from the second pistol hit a brave smack in the face. He was a real mess when he hit the ground. Preacher grabbed the second brace of pistols and let the lead fly. He couldn't hardly see a thing for the gun smoke, but knew he had put 4 Injuns on the ground, and the other one was just getting to his moccasins, still bent over in pain. Preacher jerked his long-bladed knife from its sheath and ran down the short slope toward the scared pilgrims. He ran right over that skinny Injun with the bruised privates and knocked him sprawling back to the ground. He jumped up, a war axe in his hand, and he was some mad. Preacher told him in his own language what he thought of him, his family, and his horse. The buck screamed and charged. Preacher ducked and cut him from brisket to backbone. That blade was honed to a fine edge and went in easy. The skinny Injun was out of it. Preacher ran back to his guns and loaded up again as fast as he could. The women were in a shocked silence. The man with one ear looked at Preacher like he was some sort of devil. And Preacher thought, maybe he did look like one. He hadn't shaved in a month or so, and his clothes were made from what he could kill and skin and cure. His hat was so old and floppy it had no shape. Preacher reckoned he did look like a wild man to these city folks. "Praise be," Melody found her voice. "The Lord has sent us a warrior." "He ain't done no such of a thing," Preacher told her, while cutting her bonds loose. "I just happened to be close by, Now get them others untied and let's get the hell gone from here, for more Injuns show up. The second man put his mouth in motion and stuck his 2 pennies worth in. We're all Christians, brother, and we don't hold with strong language in front of ladies. Preacher spat on the ground. That's your damn problem. I don't hold with fools coming into the mountains and stirring up the Injuns, so I reckon that makes us even. Preacher cut the others loose. He helped Melody to her feet, and she swayed against him for a moment. She was all woman, that one, and when their eyes met, Preacher could see that she knew he was all man. A high flush came to her cheeks, and her smile was tight and her eyes bright, like with a fever. They had a fever, all right, but it wasn't brought on by sickness. Preacher released her hand, and she stepped away, each knowing what the other was thinking. And Jehovah didn't have a damn thing to do with it. You don't have to worry about the other savages, the man with one ear and bloody face said. Preacher knew then he was dealing with a real pilgrim. In the mountains, a man always worries about Injuns. Preacher grunted in reply. You see, One Ear said, pulling a fancy handkerchief out of a jacket pocket and pressing it to the side of his head. The other savages fled in a different direction after the attack. They didn't flee nowheres, Preacher told him. They own these mountains. They got no reason to be afraid. All they did was split up to divvy up the booty. But how do you know they didn't plan on meeting up again right here? That shut One Ear right up. We must get Richard to a doctor, the haughty acting fella said. Preacher laughed at him. Sure, they's one about 250 miles from here. Won't take us more than a month to get there. What we'll do is get gone from here, and then I'll take a look at your partner's head. Clean it out good. I'd pour whiskey on it, but I ain't got none. You probably drank it all, lurching about in some drunken debauchery. The second female spoke up. She had her color up and was climbing up on her soapbox, cavorting about with a loose woman, more than likely a pure, simple, ignorant savage you took advantage of. Amen, the mouthy man said. It's not only the savages to whom we must introduce God. Preacher chuckled and shook his head. For sure I drank the whiskey. As to the second part, no. Let's go. When we make camp, I'll fix up a poultice for One Ear there. You ain't hurt bad, mister, but you're going to be tilting your hat to the other side of your head for the rest of your life. Now all of you move, goddammit. 2. They were in trouble, and Preacher knew that for a hard fact. The Arapaho bucks back yonder had been wearing red streaks on their faces. To an Arapaho, the color red could mean 3 things. Earth, man, or blood. In this case, Preacher pretty well knew it meant blood, and they weren't in the best of positions either. They were caught with the Shoshone just to the west of them, the Blackfoot to the north, the Crow to the east, and the Arapaho and the Cheyenne to the south, and everywhere in the immediate surroundings. All in all, it was not a good place to be. Preacher, traveling alone, never gave it much worrying time. He knew how to stay alive in hostile country. But with 4 pilgrims, that was quite another matter. And 2 of them females, no less. That only added to the problem. Get up on them horses, Preacher told them. We don't have the proper saddles for the ladies, the mouthy man said. And by the way, my name is Edmund. You know Melody and Richard. This is Penelope. Well, I am just thrilled beyond words. Now, get up on them damn horses. Nobody moved. With a snort of disgust, Preacher climbed up the gently sloping bank, slid down the other side, and fetched his own animals, leading them around to the others. They still hadn't made a move toward the ponies. He swung into the saddle and led an Indian pony over to the group. He looked at Melody. Mount up, sister. I'll get you out of here. Move, woman. Melody didn't hesitate. She stepped up on a log, hiked up her skirts, and swung onto the horse's back. Preacher handed her the reins. Let's go. What about us? Penelope shrieked. Keep your voice down, woman, Preacher said. You'd put a hog collar to shame. If you want to come with us, put your butt on that pony's back and come on. Barbarous cretin, Edmund said. You'd leave us, wouldn't you? You see my back, don't you? Preacher called over his shoulder. That tell you anything?
Are you really going to leave them? Melody whispered.
No, Preacher returned the whisper. But they don't know that. She grinned at him. Preacher winked at her.
I'm a worker in the house of the Lord, sir, she reminded him.
You're a woman first, he told her. And a hell of a woman at that. She blushed and tried to adjust her bonnet, pushing some blonde hair back under the brim and almost fell off the pony. Hang on, sister, Preacher told her. You're all lucky them Injuns took saddles from the dead pilgrims for their ponies. It'd be plumb uncomfortable if you was riding bareback.
I can just imagine, Melody muttered.
I bet you can't neither. Here come the others. I figured I'd get them moving. He looked with approving eyes at the way the men sat their saddles. They could ride. Penelope, on the other hand, was bouncing up and down like a little boat on a great big lake in the middle of a storm. Grab a hold of that saddle horn, sister, Preacher said, and hang on. The damn thing ain't for tooting, you know. She gave him a dark look and muttered something under her breath.
Must you use profanity? Edmund said.
Well, if I want to, and I want to, so hush up and stay in line, and don't get lost. Which way's what's left of the wagon train?
On the Oregon Trail, Richard said.
Preacher whoaed up and twisted in the saddle. Somebody's been playing games with you folks. The Oregon Trail is way, way south of here. People, you was lost.
As a goose, Melody said. I knew that, but nobody would listen to me.
Richard and Edmund both looked embarrassed. Richard said, I suspected our guide didn't know what he was doing. He drank a lot. I know lots of guides who drink a lot, Preacher said. That ain't got nothing to do with it. Where'd you folks outfit and jump off from?
Missouri, Melody told him. Our guide told us we would bypass Fort Hall because he knew a better route.
Damn fool, Preacher muttered. All right, how far north is the train?
I would say about 15 miles, Edmund said. No more than that, I'm sure.
Probably not that far, Preacher said. Injuns wouldn't travel that distance in these mountains for torturing and raping, if that's what they had in mind.
Perhaps you could take us on to Oregon, Edmund suggested.
I'll take you somewheres, Preacher said, and pointed his horse's nose north. Night draped the mountains before they could reach the side of the wagon train. Preacher killed a couple of rabbits with a sling and stopped before dark to build a small fire. While the meat was cooking, he said, We'll eat, then move on a couple of miles and make camp for the night. It's going to be cold, so you folks use your saddle blankets for warmth.
But they smell, Penelope complained.
You will too before you get where you're going, Preacher told her. Like a bunch of polecats, but you'll be alive, so shut up. Preacher let the others eat the rabbits while he chewed on jerky and ate a handful of some berries he'd picked. He was used to lean times. These pilgrims looked like they'd never missed a meal in their lives. He carefully put out the fire and moved them north a couple of miles for a cold camp. Melody was the only one who didn't complain, even though she was just as uncomfortable as the others. She'll do, Preacher thought. She's tough. Their eyes met in the darkness through the dim light of the quarter moon. She blinked first, then laid her head on the saddle. Preacher grinned and rolled up in his blankets. Across the small clearing, Edmund had watched the silent exchange through hot eyes and bristled in anger. They all saw the buzzards long before they reached the site of the ambush and massacre.
Those carrion birds who had not yet feasted on dead flesh soared and circled and wheeled and waited their turn in the sky, while the others staggered around on the ground, too full and heavy to lift off.
"It ain't gonna be pretty," Preacher warned. "I've seen it before. When you puke, don't get none on me. Where are you folks from, anyway?"
"Philadelphia," Richard said.
"Should have stayed there. This country's too crowded as it is. Can't ride for 5 days without seeing some damn body."
"It's called progress," Edmund said.
"It's a damn nuisance is what it is," Preacher retorted.
"Must you swear constantly?" Melody asked.
"Yeah, I must. I'm getting in practice for our rendezvous down south, although it don't look like I'm going to make it."
"I've read about those affairs," Richard said. "Then you're a real mountain man."
"I am."
"What drove you to this horrible existence?" Edmund asked.
Preacher turned to look at the city man.
"Horrible? What's so horrible about it? I'm as free as an eagle, wild as a grizzly, mean as a wolverine, tough as a cornered wolf, and quick as a puma. I can outdrink, outcuss, outfight, outdance, outsing, ride farther and faster than any man, and tell more lies than any 10 men. And I'm good looking, too."
Melody laughed at his words. "You should be ashamed of yourself," Edmund admonished him.
"Why?" Preacher asked. "For being what the good Lord intended me to be. You are what you are, I am what I am. It's just as simple as that." He reined up and let the horses drink. "This here's what we call Shine Creek. I know what your guide was up to now, but he was flat out wrong. He'd been listening to lies about a trail through the wilderness just to the west of us. There ain't no wagon trail through there. He'd have to go north over 100 miles and then cut west. But even then, that would be a tough pull. Winding way. Get caught there in the winter and you'd die. You people were listening to a fool. What happened to him anyways?"
"When the savages attacked, he ran away," Melody said. "I watched him leave."
"You know his name?"
"Jack Harris," Edmund said.
"I did not like him. He was a lot like you."
"Jack Harris ain't nothing like me," Preacher told him. "Jack's a back shooter and a coward. Brags a lot about how brave he is. But when it comes down to the nut cutting, he ain't nowhere to be found."
"He claimed to be a mountain man," Melody said.
Preacher snorted. "He's a hanger arounder is what he is. He tell you about the time I whooped him down at Bent's Fort? No, he wouldn't mention that. I whooped him to a fare thee well, I did. He ain't like me to this day."
"What was the fight about?" Richard asked. Although the man was in considerable pain, he'd come up in Preacher's eyes by not complaining about his missing ear and by pulling his weight.
"He insulted my mother." "Now, you can insult me all day long, if you do it in a friendly manner, and I'll just insult you back. But leave my dear sainted mother out of it, or get ready to get bloody."
The wind shifted and brought a horrible stench with it, wrinkling the noses of the missionaries. "That's the wagon train?" Melody asked, getting a little green around the mouth.
"Yep," Preacher said. "What's left of the bodies, that is. Buzzards will try for the soft parts first, belly and kidneys. That ain't a real pretty sight. I've seen yards and yards of guts all strung out like rope. Why, I recollect one time I come up on this Pawnee village that had been hit by a band of Injuns that didn't like 'em very much. Nobody likes the Pawnee. And I seen..." Preacher went into great long gory detail until the sounds of retching stopped him. Penelope and Edmund were off their ponies kneeling down in the trail. "What's the matter with you two?" he asked with a very definite twinkle in his eyes. "Something you eight don't agree with, you maybe."
Richard and Melody dropped off their ponies and headed for the bushes when they approached the wagon train. It was evident that the Indians had spent several hours torturing some of the survivors, and many Indian tribes could be very inventive when it came to torture. Savages, Edmund blurted. They need the word of God even more than I thought.
Is that right? Preacher asked with an odd smile. Savages, huh? Pears to me I read where they was still cutting off folks' heads in France and drawing and quartering folks over in England. Big public spectacle. Ain't them religious countries? Would you call that civilized?
Melody and Richard returned from their hurried trip to the bushes, both of them pale. The stench from the bodies was horrible. Articles of clothing and broken pieces of furniture were scattered all over the area, along with what remained of tortured men and women and older kids.
Where are the young children?
Penelope asked, her voice no more than a whisper, and her face very pale under her bonnet.
There were a dozen or more boys and girls.
Injuns took them to raise, Preacher said. They do that sometimes. If the child behaves, they'll live. Some tribes won't harm a child at all. Others will kill them outright. Injuns are notional. Just like white folks, you might say.
I don't know any white person who would harm a child, Edmund said.
Then you don't know many of your own kind, Preacher told him shortly. You folks start gathering up clothing you think might fit you and what food and powder and shot that might be found. Get yourself some warm clothing.
Stealing from the dead, Penelope said.
Preacher turned slowly and looked at her. Lady, you are beginning to wear on me. Do you, any of you, know the trouble you're in? I don't think so. We're smack in the middle of hostile Indian country, and from the paint on them dead bucks, they're on the warpath. Something stirred them up, and it's reasonable to think that they ain't the only tribe that's took up their war axes.
Preacher knelt down and began drawing in the dirt. The others leaned over to watch him.
Now pay attention, Preacher said. We're here. Dry Creek is behind us here. The South Fork of the Shoshone is to our west. The Oregon Trail is way to hell down here. Way I see it is like this. We got hostiles on the warpath all around us. We'd be damn fools to try to make it south to the wagon trail. He looked at all of them for a moment, then sighed. I reckon I'm stuck with you. I can't no good conscience leave you. Hell, you'd all die. Don't none of you seem to know north from south or what's up or down.
Now see here, Edmund protested.
Shut your fly trap, Preacher told him. And don't argue with me. I've been making it in these mountains for years. You're just a helpless baby in the wilderness. And folks, if you think this is wild, you ain't seen nothing yet. We couldn't make it with wagons where I'm thinking of carrying you. But on horseback, he shrugged his shoulders. We got a chance. We're going into the big titties.
The what?
Penelope blurted, high color springing onto her cheeks.
Mountain range that was named Les Grand Tetons by a French trapper because they reminded him of big tits, Preacher said, ducking his head to hide his grin. The grin did not escape Melody. It's wild, people. It's the most beautiful and wildest thing you'll ever see. And it's slow going, but it's the safest way. We might run into some Bannocks in yonder, but I get on well with them. Likewise, the Nez Perce further on west and north. Good people. It's our only shot, folks, and we got to take it. Now look around for a bottle of whiskey.
My word, man, Edmund said. Are you thinking of getting drunk at a time like this?
Preacher gave him a look of disgust. No, you ninny. Take a look at your friend's head, where his ear used to be. It's filling up with pus. Infection to you. I got to open it up, clean it out, and cauterize it with a hot blade. The whiskey's for him to ease the pain. Even with that, y'all gonna have to hold him down. If we don't do that, he'll die, so shut your mouth and get to looking.
Preacher slowly circled the ambush site on foot and concluded that the Indians who had done this had not been back. No need to, for at first glance there was precious little left to plunder. He began searching the rubble, grateful that the Indians had not burned the wagons. They had raped and killed and tortured, run off the horses and mules. They'd eaten the oxen, then lay up in a stuffed stupor for a day or so. But this was a sight that Preacher had seen more than once since pilgrims began pushing west. He knew all the secret places where folks liked to stash valuables. He found a cache of food in one wagon, including several pounds of coffee. Preacher immediately set about building a small smokeless fire out of dead wood and made a pot of coffee.
"Man, we have to bury the dead," Edmund said.
"You bury 'em if you're in that big a hurry," Preacher told him. "There ain't enough left of most of 'em to bother with. You'd best worry about staying alive. The dead'll take care of themselves. I'm fixing to have me some coffee." Preacher drank the hot, strong brew while the others rummaged around, picking up this and that, stepping gingerly around the torn and bloated bodies. "You women find you some men's breeches and get in 'em," Preacher called from the fire. "Be easier riding that way."
"I most certainly will not," Penelope squalled in outrage at just the thought.
"Either you do it, or I'll snatch them petticoats off'n you and dress you myself," Preacher warned her. "I ain't gonna put up with them dress tails getting snagged on bushes and such. My life and your lives are at stake here. Damn your modesty." Preacher looked westward and shook his head. He'd been in the Tetons, but never with a bunch of persnickety pilgrims, and certainly with no females dragging along.
"Disgraceful," Penelope said, holding up a pair of men's breeches and shaking them.
"Just get in them," Preacher said. "Be right interesting to see what you ladies look like without all them underthings hiding your natural charms."
"You are a vile, disgusting man," Edmund told him.
"Maybe," Preacher said, sipping another cup of coffee. "But I'm the only hope you got of staying alive. I'd bear that in mind, was I you?" He looked at Richard standing with the bottle of whiskey Preacher had found. "Drink it down, missionary. Get stumbling drunk." He took out his knife and laid it on the stones around the fire. "This ain't gonna be no fun for neither of us."
3. Preacher had to practically sit on the man to get him to take the first couple of slugs. After that, it got easier, and Richard got sillier and looser than a goose. He passed out right in the middle of his story concerning the time he peeped in on his sister taking a bath. "Lord, what wonders I did behold that evening," said he, then fell backward, out cold. Preacher grabbed his knife and went to work. He opened the wound, let it drain, cut away the infected skin, and applied a poultice he'd made. Long before Richard woke up, Preacher had cauterized the wound with the hot blade. Edmund got sick. "It ain't as bad as it looked," Preacher said. "He's gonna have him a numb of an ear. Leastways, his hat won't fall down that side. But he's gonna be hard to get along with for a couple of days. As we are, wounds heal quick, air so clean and pure. Won't be for long the way folks keep showing up out here," he added. Preacher prowled around some and found more articles he could use, including some soap and some store-bought breeches and shirts that looked like they might fit him. There was a nice lined Mackinaw coat that had only been burned a little bit, and he took that. Best-looking coat he'd ever had. And bless Pat, he found him some brand new long handles in the bottom of a trunk. In the same trunk, he found him a fancy razor and a new strop and a mug with soap. He was tempted to take some boots off the dead, but he knew he'd worn moccasins for so long, his feet would not be comfortable in anything else. He wandered off down to the creek.
"Glory be," Melody said, upon sighting him an hour later. "You are a fine-looking man."
"Melody,"
Penelope admonished her brazenness. Preacher had shaved, leaving only a mustache. He had bathed from top to bottom. He hoped nobody downstream tried to drink out of that creek for a day or two, and had dressed in the new clothes. He really felt a little self-conscious. He took the whiskey bottle and dabbed some on his freshly shaved face.
First time in 10 years I've been without a beard, Preacher said. Feels funny. He looked at Richard. He made a sound yet?
Moaned a couple of times, Edmund said. I'm beginning to get concerned about him.
Preacher shook his head. He's just passed out drunk, that's all. I've been that way myself a time or two.
I'm sure, Penelope said, giving him an acid look.
Preacher just grinned at her. Penelope needed a good man to roll around in the blankets with her for a night or two. He figured that might change her whole outlook. Of course, he admitted he could be wrong. It happened from time to time. He was wrong back in 26 or 27, he recollected.
Rather than break their backs burying the dead, they dragged the bodies to a shallow ravine and then caved earth in over them. Preacher, Edmund, Melody, and even Penelope pitched in to drag small logs and then spent the better part of an hour placing rocks over the mass gravesite. It wouldn't prevent digging and burrowing animals from getting to the bodies, but it was the best they could do under the circumstances. Preacher stood holding a new hat he'd found to replace his old one and listened to Edmund deliver a long-winded eulogy. 5 minutes passed. 10. The sun beat down mercilessly. 15 minutes, and still Edmund droned on. Preacher couldn't take it anymore. Amen, brother, he shouted and walked off. They pulled out the next morning, heading into a wilderness that only a handful of white men and no white woman had ever seen. Richard was in some pain, but he never complained. The man might be a Bible thumper, but he was steadily rising in Preacher's estimation. The man asked sensible questions, trying to learn about the land and its people, and Preacher answered each question as best he could.
Is this the Shoshone River we're crossing now?
He asked, as they forded the stream.
Nope, it's a fork off of it, though. This branch splits off east of what some folks call Heart Mountain. Injuns call it Spirit Mountain. It's sacred to some of them. Bear in mind to keep out of Injun burying grounds. That'll bring bad medicine on you. We won't cross the Shoshone this day. Tomorrow, about noon, if all goes well.
What do you mean by bad medicine? Melody asked. You don't believe in Indian superstition, do you?
What's the difference in what Injuns believe and what you're trying to bring to them? Only difference is the Injuns don't have no book like the Bible. Their religious ways is passed down by mouth. And each tribe has their shamans. They're like you folks, sort of. They believe in the Great Spirit and life after death. That happy hunting grounds claptrap is white man's bullshit, dookie. Even Edmund and Penelope had pulled closer and were paying attention and not bitching about this, that, and everything else. For a change. Injuns is real good to their kids. Very kind to them. Once you get to know them, man, they like you. They're good people. I've lived with them. I've fought them, and I've killed them. And likely I'll do all three things again. And don't you think that most Injun women is loose, 'cause they ain't. An Injun father is just like any father anywhere. You start messing with his daughter and he'll kill you. You take the Cheyenne tribe, for instance. Tough, mean fighters. Everybody's scared of the Cheyenne. But for all their fierceness, they hold women in high regard. A girl's coming of age is a big deal in a lot of Indian tribes, and any number of tribes worship dogs and wolves. If one has to be killed for whatever reason, they'll apologize to it. And to a Cheyenne, a dog is damn near a god. They even have a warrior society called the Dog Soldiers.
It sounds to me that you actually like the Indians, Edmund observed.
Oh, I do. You can't blame them for fighting the whites. Hell, this is their land. It's been theirs for only God knows how long. Thousands of years, probably. If they'd let me, I'd never strike a hostile blow against any of them. He thought about that for a moment. Well, excepting maybe them goddamn Pawnees. When they made camp that afternoon,
creature figured they were within a half day's ride of the Shoshone. As soon as they crossed it, he'd cut south, down toward Togwoody Pass. He sure wasn't going to attempt to take them across the Snake and over the middle part of the Tetons. At least he hoped he wouldn't have to. While they had been resting back at the ambush site, two horses had wandered back into camp, anxious for human closeness. Preacher had rigged up frames, and they were used for pack horses. He'd found enough canvas that hadn't been burned to use as shelters for the pilgrims. While it wasn't any fancy Eastern hotel, it did offer a small creature comfort.
"It's a great, vast, lonesome place, isn't it?" Melody asked, sitting close to the fire as the sun sank past the towering mountains.
"It's big, all right," Preacher told her. "But lonesome? Well, I never dwelled on that too much, though some folks do call it the High Lonesome. I've known men who've gone crazy out here, sure enough, and a lot more men who gave up and headed back to towns and people and such. Takes a special breed to make it out here. I knowed one old boy who lost his horse and was afoot during the winter. He fought him a puma to the death. We found them both come the spring. Both of them froze stiff to a tree. He had his hand on that big cat's head like he was saying, 'It's all right. No hard feelings. We both was just doing what come natural.'"
"Did you bury him?"
"Not right then. Ground was too hard. We come back about a month later and put them both together in a cave and sealed it shut."
"That was a nice gesture," Penelope said.
Preacher looked at her. "I reckon. Howsomever, we didn't have much choice in the matter. They was both still froze together. It'd have took an axe to get them apart."
By noon of the next day, Preacher knew they were being followed. Problem was, he didn't think they were Injuns. If they were renegade white men, they could turn out to be worse than Injuns. The mountains weren't exactly overflowing with renegade white men, but there were enough of them to cause trouble every now and then. They'd knock trappers in the head, or even shoot them for their pelts or for food, or their boots or coats for that matter. And, he thought, trying to cheer himself up, it could be a party of government surveyors or explorers. But he couldn't quite make himself believe that. He figured they were renegades after the women. Two beautiful white women could make even a good man go bad, especially men who hadn't even seen an ugly white woman in years. When he called a break and the women stepped behind some bushes to do their business, Preacher got Richard and Edmund close. "We're being followed," he told them. "I don't think it's Injuns, and it ain't the army, I'm sure of that. They'd have seen way back that we're not a hostile party, and they'd have closed with us. Any good scout would have seen the sign that women leave, and they'd be mighty curious. I think we got us some renegades on our trail, and I think they're after the women. So keep your powder dry and be ready to fight, and fight quick, because when they come, they'll do it in one of two ways. They'll either come real sudden-like, or they'll hail the camp and get in amongst us. That's what we don't want. We can't let them get in amongst us. I know you two think of yourselves as highly principled men, but you just remember this. There ain't no law out here except the gun, the knife, and the war axe. And if they're renegades, missionaries or not, they'll kill you both and do it without blinking an eye. You got the women to think about. They got to come first."
"Neither one of us has ever used violence against another human being," Edmund pointed out.
"Well, you're about to do so," Preacher said, "unless you want to die. Make up your mind. I don't think we got a lot of time to ponder it."
"We should warn the women," Richard said. "I feel they have a right to know about this."
"It's only a suspicion," Edmund said. "Why alarm them unduly?" Preacher walked away, leaving the two men arguing. When Melody and Penelope stepped out of the bushes, he walked up to them. "You ladies stay put with the men. Rest a while. No fires. You understand me?" They nodded. "Good. I'll be back in an hour or so." He took his hawken and set out at a ground-covering lope.
Preacher could run all day and had done so several times during his time in the mountains. He'd had more than one horse shot out from under him, by both white men and Injuns, by bullet and arrow, and been forced to run for his life. He ran for a couple of miles and scrambled up on a ledge. He squatted down studying their back trail. Far below and behind them, he could pick out tiny doll figures moving toward them on horseback. He counted 8 riders, and they were not Indians. They had only 2 pack horses, so they were not trappers. They were not dressed in uniform, so they were not military. That left government explorers or renegades. Preacher had him a strong suspicion they were the latter. "Damn," he said, as if he didn't have enough problems without this being added. If that was Bum Kelly's bunch, they were in real serious trouble. Bum had come out back around 28 or 29 and immediately started making trouble wherever he happened to be. He always had anywhere from 10 to 14 thieves and killers and toughs hanging around him, and the gang ranged from the Utah Territory up into the British-held lands. There wasn't nothing Bum and his bunch wouldn't do, and precious little they hadn't done. And all of it bad. He wished he had him a spyglass, but then figured as long as he was wishing, he might as well wish for a detachment of soldier boys and about 6 of his good friends, like Thumbs Carroll, Nighthawk, Tennessee, and some others. They'd probably all be way south of his position, though. Might as well wish for the moon, Preacher muttered, and then picked up his rifle. He paused as 4 more riders caught his eye, one of them leading a pack horse. "That's about right," he muttered. 12 bad ones and me with a 1-eared gospel shatter, a smart-aleck missionary, and 2 faithful female followers. Lord have mercy on a poor mountain boy. He picked up his hawking and loped back to where he had left them. "Mount up," he told them, bending over to catch his breath. "We got big troubles about 5 miles behind us."
"You ran 5 miles?" Penelope asked.
"I run all day, lady, and half into the night for. I'll tell you about it sometime, but not now. Let's go." Preacher pushed the group. He knew where he wanted to go. It wasn't no more than a day's ride, and he set a hard pace. They had crossed the Shoshone, and now, instead of cutting south as he had planned, Preacher rode straight west toward a place he'd once wintered. He figured the hidden cave was still there. He had no idea what it would take to make it disappear, other than God. He rode into a tiny creek and told the others, "Stay right behind me. Don't get out of this creek. It won't fool them for long, but it will slow them up trying to figure out where we left it." He chuckled. "And that, boys and girls, is something that's going to take them a while to do." They rode for several miles, always staying in the creek, until coming to a sandy, rocky flat. "We'll leave it here," Preacher told them as he swung down from the saddle. "Stand down for a couple of minutes and rest. Let the horses blow. I got to do something." He had saved his old buckskins, and now he cut them up to make socks for the horses' hooves.
"Why are you doing that?" Richard asked.
"So's the steel hooves won't scar the rocks and leave a trail," Preacher told him. "Get that old ragged blanket off my pack horse and do the same with it. Quickly, people, every minute counts." When the hooves were covered, Preacher led the group to the timber and told them not to move from that spot. Then he led the horses over, one at a time, and had each one mount up. "Stay with me," he told them. "Don't snag a thread on a branch. If you do, holler and stop and pick it off. They'll find this trail eventually, but let's don't make it any easier for them." Preacher led them deep into virgin forests, forging his own trail, the needles and leaves making only faint whispering sounds under the hooves. He pointed to a tree, which had strange markings some 20 feet off the ground. "Grizzly, and a big one. He'll stand 12 feet high and weigh damn near 6 ton. If a grizzly gets after you, climb a tree. They're so big and heavy they don't climb. Usually," he added with a smile. Edmund looked up at the scratchings and shook his head.
wondering what it would be like to come face to face with a beast that large. It was a trail-weary and saddle-sore bunch that finally slipped out of the saddle just at dusk. Preacher had set a grueling pace, and he didn't make matters any better when he said, "Cold camp, no fires, roll up in your blankets now and stay there. Cool, clear night like this, the odor of food cooking or coffee boiling would travel 5 miles. This spruce and pine's got an odor to it, too."
"Not even a little fire?"
Penelope asked. "No. See to your horses, rub them down good, and picket them careful on graze."
"Tyrant," she muttered.
Preacher slept well, but cautiously that night, as he usually did in the mountains. He did not awaken at natural sounds. The sounds of a hunting owl seizing a mouse or rat or rabbit would not pull him awake. The lonesome call of a coyote or the talking of wolves would not alarm him. A breaking twig would pull him instantly alert, for deer or elk or most forest creatures would not step on a branch unless they were frightened and running. Man steps on twigs and branches. The rain woke him several hours before dawn would touch the high country. He quietly climbed out of his blankets and rolled them in his ground sheet. The others slept on, unaware of anything that was happening around them. They would have to learn the woods, or they'd die. With it raining, he would chance a small fire for coffee, built under an overhang to break up the smoke. He checked the snares he'd set out the evening before and found 2 fat rabbits. He skinned them out and carefully scraped the meat from the skin and rolled them up from habit. They made good glove linings. He had the meat cooking before the others began stirring. Melody was the first up. She completed her morning toilet and joined Preacher by the small fire, both of them waiting for the coffee to boil and the meat to sear.
"We're in trouble, aren't we?" she asked.
"It ain't the best situation I ever been in," he acknowledged. "But it ain't the worst, neither. I get to my secret hidey hole, and it is a hole. We can all get some rest and figure out our next move. It'll take Bum and them others some time to find us there." "They might never," Preacher told her, knowing it to be a lie. He poured them coffee, both of them cupping their fingers around the tin, warming their extremities, for the morning was cold this high up. The others slept on. Preacher met her blues across the fire. "Edmund's sweet on you."
"I know, but I don't share his feelings at all. He's not a bad person, really, Preacher. He's just far out of his element. And he's scared, like all the rest of us. Except you."
"I'd be scared in a big city like Philadelphia. Too damn many people for my tastes." He shook his head. His hair was long, hanging well past his ears, for he hadn't cropped it all winter. It helped to keep his head and face warm during the brutal mountain winters. "You don't act like no gospel shouter I ever seen, Melody. Richard and Edmund, yeah, and Penelope, too, but not you. How'd you get tied up in an outfit like this one?"
"Through a society I belong to. We all thought it would be a grand adventure, and we could help bring the Lord to the savages. I'm afraid we didn't think it out very thoroughly."
"You sure didn't. No place for a woman out here, not yet. Someday, yeah. Someday, this country will be ruined with people." The last was spoken with some bitterness. Melody smiled at him across the flames.
"It has to be, Preacher. The nation is growing. People want to build new lives, to explore, to expand. Do you know about the steam locomotives?"
"The what?"
"Locomotives that run by steam. It's true. We've had them for almost 6 years now. Soon the railroads will be running everywhere."
"Not out here."
"Oh, yes, Preacher, even out here.
A true visionary, by the name of Dr. Hartwell Carver, is proposing a transcontinental route."
"A trans what?" "Coast-to-coast railroad tracks. You wait and see. It will happen."
"Stars and garters. I never heard of such a thing.
Why, I had a man tell me that no more than 5 or 6 years ago, they wasn't but 100 miles of track in the whole United States.
That's true, but I assure you, there are many, many more miles of track than that now.
Preacher shook his head. Makes a poor man like me feel plumb ignorant.
She smiled. No, Preacher, never ignorant. You've just been isolated, that's all. When was the last time you read a newspaper?
I don't remember. I can read, he quickly added. I went to the 5th grade, but it's been so many years since I read a word I'd have trouble. I imagined.
I understand that there's talk already of an expedition to chart a route from St. Louis to San Francisco, although I'm sure it will be several years before that happens. Can you just imagine that? A railroad from St. Louis westward all the way across the nation. It's mind-boggling. Preacher, the government will be looking for men like you to lead those scouting parties. Men like you who know the wilderness that so many of us have only read about. Ignorant, Preacher? No, you're far from being that. You've been to California?
Oh, yeah. I've seen the Blue Waters a couple of times. I've been to California and Oregon. Hard, mean trip from here. A railroad? That's impossible. You can't build no damn railroad through these mountains.
He again shook his head.
That's a pipe dream, Melody. It ain't possible. You can't hardly get a wagon through. You can't even do that in most spots.
But you are going to take us to Oregon, aren't you, Preacher?
I sure ain't gonna leave you out here alone. He hedged the question slightly.
She smiled and kissed him right on the mouth.
Startled Preacher so bad he spilled the hot coffee right on his crotch, and he jumped up hollering and bellering and slapping at himself. The others thought they were under attack and went into a panic. Penelope got all tangled up in her blanket, shrieking like a banshee, and Richard jumped out of his blanket, the back flap to his underwear hanging down. Edmund flew out of his blankets and ran slap into a tree, knocking himself goofy. Which wasn't that long a trip. Melody and Preacher hung on to each other, laughing so hard they had tears in their eyes.
4.
Lost their tracks, the renegade reported back to Bum. He took him into that creek yonder. I don't know whether he went up or down. Down if he was smart. Preacher is anything but smart, Bum replied, knowing he was telling a lie. Preacher was as wily a mountain man as ever tracked a deer, and as dangerous as any puma. He remembered that time down on the Poison Spider Creek when an old boy named Jason Dunbar got to needling Preacher about his name. Preacher took all he could stomach and told him to lay off or stand up and get ready to duke it out. Dunbar was a good foot taller than Preacher and outweighed him by 100 pounds. But when Preacher got through with Dunbar and finally let him fall, Jason Dunbar didn't have no front teeth left him at all. Couldn't straighten up for a week, and only had half of his left ear. Preacher had bit off the top half. Preacher had put a thrashing on Jason that was talked about for years afterward. Bum shook his head. No, Luke, I done told you a tale. Preacher's smart. He's mean. He's tough and he's quick. And when we catch him, and we will catch up to him and them folks, he won't go down easy. We'll lose some people. Bridger and Broken Hand Fitzpatrick and Carson and Beckworth all speak highly of the man. Them boys don't give praise lightly. Bear that in mind.
2 women out there, another thug said, pulling at himself. White women.
Been a long time since I had me a taste of white women. Hell, slug, another man said. I ain't even seen a white woman in more'n 2 years. Jack Harris was leading them pilgrims straight to us, Bum mused aloud. How the hell was I supposed to know a bunch of Arapaho was waiting in ambush? He cussed and kicked at a rotten branch and it flew into 100 pieces. Damn the luck, anyways. And where the hell did Jack get off to?
another questioned. Running for his life, probably, Bum said. He's probably settled down and hunting our trail now. He'll be along. Come on, let's fan out and try to pick up Preacher's trail. Sal? One of his gang questioned, looking down the little creek. Bum shook his head. No, but now Preacher knows we're tracking him. He ain't gonna do this the easy way. George, you take a few boys and head south a ways just to make sure. Beckman, you take the west side of the creek. Moses, you take the east side. You both work north. The rest of us will wait here so's not to crap up any sign. Take off. Adam, you build us a fire and we'll boil some coffee. He bit off a chew from a twist and looked up the creek. Wide women, he muttered. And them men with them is toting gold, too. I got a good feeling about this. A real good feeling. Several miles from his destination, Preacher halted the short column and once more sacked the horse's hooves. He then led the group up a gently sloping hill to a jumble of rocks on a ledge. A towering mountain loomed high above them, snow-capped all year round. It gets right close in here, folks, Preacher told them. So mind your feet and knees. He led them into a narrow, twisting passageway that was just wide enough for them to pass with not 3 inches to spare on either side. There was just enough light filtering in from the crag high above them to illuminate their way. Eerie, Melody muttered. With the sacking still on their horses' hooves, the party made very little noise as they moved along. The narrow fissure suddenly opened up into a high, huge, cathedral-like cavern with a bubbling stream running right through it, about 100 feet long and several times that in width. The other end opened up into a beautiful little valley, about 25 or 30 acres of lush grass and a winding little creek. I don't think anybody else knows about this place, Preacher said. Them drawings on the walls was done hundreds of years ago, I reckon. Lord knows I ain't never seen no beasties that look like some of them animals yonder. If you was to talk to an Injun about this place, he'd tell you it was the people who came before who done this. Sounds reasonable to me.
Is the way we came in the only way in? Richard asked.
Nope, there's another way. See that waterfall over across the valley? There's another cave under that leads into a blowdown on the other side.
A what? Edmund asked.
Long time ago, years. Must have been a terrible storm struck here. Tore up several 100 acres. Huge trees tore up by the roots and tossed every which way, piled on top of one another and flung willy-nilly about. The cave comes out direct into all that mess. Them chasing us might look a little ways into that blowdown, but they ain't gonna give it no good look-see. Too wild a place. Now in here where we is, the smoke filters up through them cracks in the ceiling and disappears somewhere else. I built me a roaring smoking fire in here one winter's morning and spent the rest of the day outside. I never seen no smoke nor smelled none. We're as safe as I can make us. Now what I want you folks to do is this. Strip the horses and put them out to pasture. I'm going to take my bow, go out into that blowdown, and kill us a deer or two so's we'll have some meat to go along with the beans and bread that you ladies are going to make from the flour we salvaged back at the ambush site. There's fish in that stream in the valley that's mighty good eating. I'm going to be gone the rest of the day and maybe the night. Don't worry. I'll be back if a rattler don't bite me, a bear don't tree me. A puma don't jump on me and claw me to death. An Injun don't kill me, or I don't die.